I got your
completely
thing.
Completely missed my segue.
Yeah, I did. Okay. Give me a sec.
He needs a moment to process this.
I do.
Maybe you need a new processor, mate.
I need an AI tool.
Yeah, incoming rant warning here.
Incoming rant warning.
Welcome to GCP Bytes, episode number 7 for Friday, the 6th of December, 2024. GCP Bytes is a podcast where we discuss Google Cloud and tech. I'm your host, Stephen Bancroft. On today's show, it's the last show of the year, so Merry Christmas to everybody. Google Cloud is making gains. Is it the end of Chrome? What's Aussie Broadband building? And how will AI save us some money? Find out in the AI Wars. Before we get to any of that, I'd like to introduce the co-host of the show, Dave Wall. How are you going, Dave?
I'm doing awesome today, mate. I'm looking down the barrel at the end of the year.
That's it. And our very own GDE, Ian Brown. How are you, Ian?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Good. Ah, yes, the last show of the year. How are you all feeling?
Pumped.
It'd be nice to have a little break from the content schedule, huh?
It would be. We're going to take a break over Christmas and New Year's, and we did discuss the return date, but I can't remember it off the top of my head right at the moment, but it's, what, halfway through January thereabouts, wasn't it?
Something like that. I think I'm
mandatory shutdown period.
Yeah, that's it. Mandatory leave taken, except I'm not taking any leave. Damn it.
I'm on a big break. I'm actually on leave right now. So, you know, I'm putting in the hours for you guys.
Oh, very good.
Love it.
we'll pay you overtime.
Yeah.
Double what we normally pay you to do in this podcast.
Which is still zero.
only if.
Double zero, still zero. Yeah. We're good.
Well, I've got stacks of things done in the last 2 weeks. No real tech adventures, though, but I might have fixed a leak in my pool. I've had about 3 or 4 trips to Bunnings, you know, those kind of things, getting this, that, and the other done. What about you guys?
Not so much on the tech side of things. Checking out tech in new cars, definitely. We took the caravan away.
That's big tech, physically large tech.
Very large tech, yeah. We took the caravan away last weekend and have come to the realization that our 20-year-old Land Cruiser is probably a little bit long in the tooth for pulling 3-ton of caravan.
Mm-hmm.
So
no power.
Yeah, well, no power, and it's 20 years old, so I don't want to break it. It's worth a bit of money at the moment. If it blows an engine up, it's not worth any money.
Mm.
So
there's always value in scrap.
Yeah. Well, yeah, probably. So we're looking for a new car. We took a Nissan Patrol, the Y62 Patrol, out for a test drive. The anti-Nissan dude took a Nissan Patrol out for a test drive last weekend and absolutely loved it. V8. Big V8 in it. It's got more power than you can count. There's so many horses under the bonnet, it's not funny. So definitely it'd be able to pull the chassis out from underneath the caravan. But
we're going to need a bigger caravan then.
That's right. But look, it's nigh on $100,000 by the time we've got it kitted out to actually be able to tow the caravan. So towing mirrors and brake controller kit all wired up for our caravan because it's got a custom plug on it. Airbags under the rear, suspension, and all the bits and pieces that you need in order to be able to tow safely. We did have a look at a Land Cruiser, for just so that the Toyota guys out there don't crucify me. We did have a look at a Land Cruiser, but let's put it this way. The comparison is at the bottom of the range Nissan Patrol is roughly equivalent in specifications to the Sahara Land Cruiser. Mm-hmm. So I could pay $95,000 for a Patrol. Mm-hmm. Or $150,000 for a Land Cruiser.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
it's eye-watering.
And the Land Cruiser has half the power of the Patrol.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you could buy your Patrol and then like a little snack car to just run alongside.
Yeah.
So people do, and they tow it along behind the caravan.
Yeah, that's right.
The cute one.
We're not committing to it just yet because obviously Nissan came out with some financial woes the other day, like literally the day after we we test drove it, they came out with this like, oh, you know, Nissan's in financial trouble and might not make it the next 12 months. So I don't want to
go. And it's not just Nissan, it's the parent company, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's
Nissan,
right.
Renault, Nissan, Mitsubishi, yeah.
So, yeah, Renault is pulling out of Nissan, which is where it's all stemmed from. So my concern there is that I buy $100,000 worth of motor vehicle and in 12 months' time I have no warranty.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's a problem.
And it's a big gamble. Like somebody, like almost certainly somebody, even it's probably like, you know, SIAC Motor or something like that will pick up those brands. But while you've got that uncertainty now about who's going to give me that after-sales support, that's a big gamble. Mm,
that's right. Mm. And I mean, we've seen it happen with Holden in Australia. They closed down and then like GM closed the brand down completely. But GM was still present and you could still get parts and all that sort of stuff. So that wasn't so much of an issue. When I found out that it might actually be going broke, that's a different conundrum.
Yeah, yeah.
So this weekend, we're actually going out to have a look at a couple of other cars. So yes, we're going to go and have a look at a Ford Everest and a Ford Ranger. We're also going to have a look at the D-Max/MUX. Just as a comparison, I know they're nowhere near the specs on the Patrol. They won't be anywhere near as big and powerful as the Patrol is, but it'd be good to understand what they are because they're 2/3 of the price of a Patrol.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. So, what if you get two of them and then you can run in parallel, right? Like like horses on a chariot. You can sit on the top of your caravan
I won't have spent more money than a Land Cruiser.
But you do get that 4JJ engine in those. So
That's right.
Uber reliable engine, right?
Yeah. So the 3-liter four cylinder that's in the MUX and the D-Max is a bit of an unbreakable beast. Mm. The issue that I've got with that is out of the factory stock standard, it's 140 kilowatts of power.
Yeah.
The Everest and Ranger are 184, 188. I can't remember the numbers now.
Big difference.
And the Patrol is 298 or something kilowatts. It's nigh on
298. What is it? A ship engine?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's put a dirty, great big Cummins diesel in it.
You got to wait until you get outside the city limits and then you can start burning bunker oil.
Yeah. So, look, I think the Ranger/Everest works out at about $69,000 with our trade-in built. The MUX and D-Max are slightly more than that. I think they're 72. The Patrol are coming at about 100. That's all within the realms of possibility.
Yeah, right. Well, lots of good options there, mate, and good luck with your search. And good luck to Nissan, right?
I wish them the best of luck. I don't want to see that brand go away because that's the rivalry.
That's it, yeah.
if there's no rival, then how can I exist?
Yeah. Well, you know, Becky and I gave each other plenty of crap on our Cape trip last year.
Yep, and then it was the Nissan that eventually gave up. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm told I should have it back by the end of the year, so we'll see what happens. I don't have it back yet, but
this year,
you've raised
saga,
the question though. Now. It's a never ending saga. Dave, you'd had a factory expansion. You mentioned it. Tell us about it.
So I was getting a bit tight on capacity. So, you know, getting a bit of a backlog of orders, need a bit more, like a few more machines just to be able to handle it because a lot of them are running pretty much close to 24/7. Like I'd be kicking batches off just before I go to bed and then turn the same machine around to run it first thing in the morning. But wanted to hold out for the Black Friday sales and Prusa, which most of my print farm, pretty much all my print farm at the moment, is running on Prusa 3D printers. Great Black Friday sale came out, so I've added another four machines there, but also I'm upgrading every machine that's in my farm currently, so they're going to be able to print faster, print a bit better. So that's going to be a big project. Mm. And that'll be about 20 machines worth of upgrades that I kind of need to do over the next month or so before a pallet load of hardware turns up for my really large printer that I purchased about a month ago. So that's a significantly larger machine that'll let me print like a half a meter cube on it. Not that I'm going to print a half a meter cube, but
things that size. Yeah.
So when you say you're upgrading the machines, what are you upgrading in them?
So a bunch of my like original ones, they're running like an ancient little controller. It's like a 8-bit controller.
Yeah, right.
which is, you know, they do pretty well, but they don't have the performance to be able to do input shaping, which is on sort of newer machines, which allows them to run a lot faster because they're doing the math to calculate sort of the resonance. So as like the print heads are moving around, they can start to actually like work out when they need to sort of slow down so the head's in the right spot at the right time so that you don't lose print accuracy. Yeah. But it's pretty much a 100% increase in speed. So for a bunch of my really old machines, that'll be like doubling them. And it was, you know, not an expensive upgrade to do that. And then for my newer ones, it's predominantly down to a bit of print quality upgrades for when you're bridging. So if you think about, if you're printing something that's on an angle, like it needs to be supported underneath, and the newer machines will print a clean, like at a sharper angle. Like you could get out to like even like 70 degrees and still have it be clean. Now I design all my prints, you know, to sort of minimize any issues there, but it opens up a few more design options for me if I can take sharper angles, you know, without, you know, needing to add supports and, you know, a lot of post-processing in afterwards. So that'll be good.
What is a, like, because you said you're upgrading the controller on them. So what is that? Is that just a plug and play thing? You just rip the old one out, disconnect a few cables, rip it out, put a new one in?
It's a bit more. You've got like the whole computer at the back. I've got to rerun all the wires through to it. It's not just like a single module that you swap out. Yeah. You also get a new display on them, and the upgraded unit also has Ethernet as well as Wi-Fi on it. Whereas my really old machines, the only way to get them online is to you could get a Raspberry Pi Zero.
Yep.
You could slot in and you could do it that way. But I've tried that and it was a little flaky. It's much better having like an actual unit that has everything on board. Plus the fact that I can have Ethernet as well. So that's going to be kind of like a separate project. At the moment, I'm keeping all my machines offline. But once I've got the entire farm on the same platform, then I'm going to switch over to using the online controls for them. Which will help, like, first thing in the morning when you want to, like, preheat every machine, having them online means I can just send, like, a single API call to tell them all to wake up.
Yep. Right.
Yeah.
That'd be Dave's going to be putting three phase in his shed shortly.
My single phase is covering me for now. I think as long as I start them all up, like, with a time delay between each one, then it's okay.
Cascade.
Surge current doesn't ramp right up.
Yep. Yeah, no, exactly. So, that'd be good. It's going to be very busy.
Yeah. It sounds like your holidays are cut out for you, mate.
Yes. Well, I'm actually, because we're going to go away after Christmas, I should have a couple of the printer kits with me. Like, I'm going to take two and I'll go build them while I'm on holidays.
Nice.
Well, let's just shift gears for a sec then and move on to some tech articles. Pat Gelsinger, out from Intel.
He's out. I mean, we've covered Intel's dramas for like a while now, and everyone, all the sharks are circling blood in the water. Mm. And yeah, so it looks like Pat was finally pushed.
Yeah,
it says he's chosen to resign, but
resign or we'll push you.
and I think this is largely because, I mean, Intel announced a $16.6 billion loss for Q3 of 2024. That's an awful lot of coin.
Yeah. Ouch.
Yeah. So, and that's in between all their dramas that they've been having with spinning off like a foundry division. There's been multiple issues in the like Gen 14, 15 CPUs.
Yep. But their new Arc GPUs, the specs on the new Arc GPUs look pretty good. Like for what it is, surprising.
I think they're a bit behind the 8-ball though on the GPU and TPU front.
They are, but the price versus the horsepower, the performance to price ratio is really good. If you want an entry level card, the specs and the price on the new Arc are looking really good.
Okay,
assuming they deliver.
Yeah, and then drivers, is always a big thing. But Intel software is usually pretty good.
It's open source. The Arc drivers are open source, so should be okay there.
That's pretty cool. But so considering that Gelsinger, he started at Intel when he was back in 1979, like absolutely distinguished engineer and CPU architect.
He was like the lead architect on one of the early platforms.
The 8486.
Oh, 8486. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, right. He was the guy. And then, he left there to go to EMC. Mm-hmm. EMC had acquired VMware and he was running VMware for years, back when VMware was good.
Yeah.
And then, he sort of came back to Intel back in 2021 because, Intel hasn't been looking good for a while. Mm. And was clearly bought in to try and right the ship. And unfortunately, the last 3 years have not been kind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of a shame to, end his career out that way.
More or less. But he might find something to move on to.
I wonder how much of that, because, obviously the CEO bears the brunt of all sort of bad financial market in a business. But I wonder how much of that is actually his fault or how much of that is the board not agreeing with him or wanting to do something different and vetoing projects that would have put potentially Intel right.
It could very well be. And I'm seeing some rumors now that it's likely that the new CEO could be one of the board members that had clashed with him over the years on strategy. So, we'll see there. But Intel squandered their manufacturing approach. They used to have the best nodes, right? You were like, mm-hmm. okay. Yeah, the whole TikTok design philosophy where this year you would get a node shrink and then next year you would get performance optimizations and then the year after you'd get another node shrink and then they just got stuck on, 10 nanometer.
Yep.
And in that time, TSMC just absolutely leapfrogged them.
Mm.
And then proceeded to keep leapfrogging. They just kept jumping.
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
So. Yeah, I think where it sort of for me comes down to, if you think of AMD when they ditched their foundry business, years ago now, what was it? Probably 15 years ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
To Global Foundries. It was clearly the right call for AMD because it was like, hey, we just want to be chip designers. we have no business actually running fabs.
We're not manufacturing yet.
Yeah, that's right.
And I expect Intel's probably going to go the same way.
And they're doing really, really well too, AMD. Their Ryzen 9 processors phenomenal. Intel killing machine, to coin the term.
And that's been part of the response. They're partly responsible for the downturn,
Yeah, that's right. And they're Ryzen. So my young fella, he had the option to buy a brand new PC last year. And he chose to go all AMD, Ryzen and a Radeon, and he loves it.
Yeah.
The only thing that I'm seeing that is attractive on the Intel side at the moment, and I see this more in the mini PC space, right? Mm. Is that the Intel ones? If you get an Intel machine, you're more likely to get at least 2.5 gig NICs, and Thunderbolt. Right, you've got. Some of the I/O is significantly better than any of the AMD options, right? So, and Intel NICs are still great. Yeah. So, if you're building a rig and you're buying your motherboard and stuff, it's sort of different. Of course, you've got a bit more flexibility in what you're going to put in there. But in the small form factor space, Yeah, it seems like Intel's probably the what's on board in the CPU is aligning to these enhanced interfaces.
Mm.
So, you know, we still want to have that competition. Like, I've got AMD in all my personally built machines.
Yeah.
But, you know, like we needed AMD to make Intel start giving us more than four cores, you know, we'd also need Intel to stop AMD from ossifying.
Yes. Maybe, Dave, they need some AI tools to help them with that.
Okay, so AI tools.
Yes.
I'll tell you about AI tools, mate. So you know what is being the my bugbear at the moment is AI tools, right? So,
right.
So I got two in particular. So I hate the AI search summary. The overview. Hate it.
We liked it last episode. We liked it. Now we don't like it.
No, last episode I was like, hey, this is a new interesting thing. Now I've had to live with it for a fortnight. I hate it and I don't want it there. Oh, right. Well, it's at the top of the screen.
Go then. Start using DuckDuckGo then.
Well, I might just have to. Maybe I'm going to Bing. That's it. Take it.
Start Binging things. Till there's a ChatGPT one. Not get the information I need and then rant about
it. Tell me, what is it you don't like about it?
Well, okay, for a start, I don't like it being at the top there, right? Like, that's where I want my
consuming
my
real
number
estate.
One links. Yeah, that's the premium spot.
Don't you
right?
like ads there? Don't you like an ad there, a sponsored link there?
No, but most of the time, the sponsored link is actually the link I want anyway. Right. The sponsored link is just the same link that's number one, but Google gets a click cost.
Yeah.
So, but you almost certainly, I actually want to click that link. And then, you know, if I've got Pi-hole enabled, then it doesn't work for me anyway because the Google ad bit is blocked.
I love it. Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. It frustrates a living Dallas out of my wife, though, because she keeps clicking on the sponsored links.
On the sponsored
links. And then she's like, why doesn't this page work? And I'm like, oh, yes, okay, it's blocked, love. It's got a tracker.
Yeah, I have to say, I was trying to solve a problem on one of my music laptops over here last night, and the bit of software on it wasn't doing as I expected, and trying to judiciously Google some answers for it, and the Gen AI response at the top there said, oh, go into here and open this and then click remove and add computer. And I went in there and, of course, that option just didn't exist. It was completely wrong, the information it was giving me.
I had exactly the same problem on the weekend with a question I asked it. And I was like, I'll give it a crack. And I found that it was completely off. And then I've been paying more attention to it of late just to try and see if it's like it was just maybe the search term I put in or – and yeah, like researching specs on cars and it's completely off the mark. Like it's taking US variants of cars and all sorts of, and I'm like,
right,
get rid of this thing. And then I searched on how could I get rid of the AI overview? No, you can't do that.
Oh, we can't? We can't opt out?
No, you cannot opt out of it. It is not an optional thing.
Maybe you can get a plugin to kill the element or something maybe.
Yeah, maybe I need that, but the, you know, Google disabled that in Chrome.
Shit, it's not in Manifest 3.
Yeah.
So, so that's the thing. That's one.
Yeah.
The other one is, so my website is Shopify in the back end, and part of that is you get Shopify inbox. So, you know, when somebody, you're on a website, a little pop-up in the corner says like, hey, ping us if you need any help, right? So if someone does that, it pings me, right? I get a message and I can just talk to them. I don't have to sit in front of a thing. I can just do it on my phone. However, Shopify and their wisdom are like, oh, great. We will use AI to auto-generate your responses. But it does it into the text box. So the first thing, so just a note, you can disable this, but by default, it is on.
Yep.
And you have to do it in every place. You can't just do like, okay, for this store, whether you're on the computer or on your phone or somebody else's phone, have it disabled. So it comes on by default and it does pull information from your store, from like your product listings. That's cool. However, it dumps it straight in the checkbox. So if someone says, hey, have you got, I don't know, a mount for this device? You can't just go and type straight away because there's a little thing where it's like generating the response and then it comes up with some garbage, which may be right, but not probably in the spirit of actually what the customer asks. And then you have to delete what's in the text box and then type in.
Yeah, that's frustrating.
Right. And if you're not paying attention, you can just hit enter and it goes because it sends it.
Mm.
It's like, why did you put this on by default? Even if you wanted to have like a little thing like, hey, maybe use this, or here's a prompt that you can click a button and
response.
And put it into the text box. But yeah. So far, I'm not liking this AI future.
Well,
this is my own judgment day.
We talk about AI rants. I had to contact a company, an online retailer, the other day. And they, of course, they've got the AI generated like little helpery thing. And so you jump in there and it's like, hey, I'm chasing up the tracking on this. I haven't received it yet. And it's like, oh, and it pops up. It's evidently an AI response. Here's the tracking link. I'm like, yeah, that's not what I asked for. I want an update on the tracking, not the tracking. I've already got the tracking link. I'm well aware of how to track something. You sent me the email that's got the link in it. I want an update on it because it's been more than a week and I haven't received it. And it took me 3 or 4 goes before I figured out the exact prompt to give it to actually connect me with someone legitimate.
So you just go, customer support, yep. customer support.
Oh, no, I was quite abrupt with it.
Customer support, please. Well,
my experience has been a little bit better. During the Black Friday sales, I bought some audio software, and a lot of course, everyone's on the bandwagon now, and all the audio software includes AI. Everything's got to have AI in it.
It's a new catchword.
In fact, there's a I didn't buy this particular one, but there is a plugin out now called SynthGPT, and you can have it loaded and you can literally type in the prompt, I need an airy sounding pad, and it'll generate this sound for you, and then you can just play it on your keyboard and you've got this sound based on your text prompt, which is pretty cool. But a lot of the things that I like to use are like audio processing tools, you know, to remove noise and enhance this and enhance that stuff. So I got a few plugins like that. And one I did get was, it's called Ozone 11, and it has like a couple of presets and an auto thing on it, which is automatically generates your preset from AI, using AI. And you know what? It does the job. Like it can turn, you know, a very average sounding thing into something that really pops and sounds really good. So I was pretty happy with that purchase. And of course I got it at a fraction of the cost because of the Black Friday sales.
The holiday that we don't celebrate.
In that world. The holiday that we don't celebrate. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, no, I get it, Dave. It's
oh, that AI overview, I hate it. It's the bane of my existence. It takes up so much room. And you search on the phone.
Yeah, the fact that you're reading it and I have to go double check this. And so I have to do a different search to double check it.
Yeah.
Like, well, now it's taking me longer. You haven't helped me.
Yeah, yeah. That's the problem. It's not 100% reliable. That's a big problem at the moment. And talking about oversight, we really do live in the nanny state, don't we?
We very much do.
Although Australia has ditched plans to fine tech giants for misinformation, which I think is actually a step backwards because, you know, there is a lot of misinformation on social media. I mean, come on, the earth is round, people. You know what I mean? The earth is, it's actually an oblique spheroid. It is not flat. Yep.
It is indeed an oblique spheroid.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you corrected yourself to that. We need that. We've got that bulge in the middle.
Got to get that right.
Round-esque, round adjacent.
Yeah. So I was a little bit disappointed with this one, but it's a matter of how do you police it. You know, I guess the stuff is there. They've got to be seen to removing it, but it ends up being Streisand effect and the stuff just amplifies. But what they have gone and done, and we don't want to get too caught up on this one, is introduce a social media ban for children under the age of 16.
And I have some very, very strong opinions on this. But
disgust.
But to be very mild on it, I don't want or need the government interfering with how I raise my child. If I say that my child is allowed on social media, it is because I respect his ability to interact with it safely enough that I have given him that privilege, because otherwise he doesn't get it.
It does seem like an overreach from that perspective, yeah.
And I think if you're not comfortable with your child being on social media, then don't let them on social media. It's simple.
I mean, I would come at it that say that nobody should be on social media and that social media has been a poison in society.
Oh, I 100% agree.
And that absolutely no one should be on it. And so the ban should be across the board. But I know, like, thankfully, because I remember just the dumb stuff that I used to do online when I was a teenager, like the things that we would do on like MSN Messenger, right? Where at least there's no record of it, right?
IRC.
Man.
IRC back in the day.
So like, all the, like, I would have been so dumb posting things on like MySpace and stuff, but that all came out like just a little bit after me, right? So I'm glad that that stuff wasn't around when I was a teenager. And yeah, you know,
my biggest problem with it right from the beginning was define social media, right? What is the definition of social media? And I like, you could argue anything on the web is social media, right? Now, I just did a quick Google search, and ironically, it's given me an AI overview in it. I had to look this up.
But is it hallucinating?
Well, actually, an article from The Guardian, it says this will include TikTok, Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, X, and Reddit. So, you know, immediately I look at that shortlist and I go, well, Reddit, I mean, it's a forum. Yeah. Like, it's no different to any other public forum, that, and there's millions of them out there on the net. Okay, you're banning TikTok and Snapchat, but 99% of the videos that appear on TikTok and Snapchat end up in YouTube Shorts anyway, and you've got the same interaction happening on YouTube Shorts.
Yeah, I think that's part of the goal, is that YouTube Shorts and Instagram Reels is supposed to be like a similar thing. It's that short form factor video.
YouTube's not included in the list. Apparently YouTube's okay.
Right.
So where's your Blue Sky?
Yeah.
Right? So X is banned, but like everyone's moving to Blue Sky at the moment. I don't see that on there. You know, how far do you go? Is Discord a social media platform?
And then I think the, like, more worrying concern I've got is, how are they going to police? Because the only way I can see them policing this is with the thing that we voted against, a digital ID. That got thrown out.
Mm.
And so now I can see that they're going to require both the parents and the child to get an ID to validate the child's age. And I'm not sure I'm going to do that.
I think we're just going to have to see how it actually fleshes out. I think that's more, for me, that's more of a point around it. It's like, okay, well, how's it going to be enforced? I think I've now settled down, like, because I was originally most like, what are you doing? We're all going to have to go to this, you know, get an ID. We're all going to have to, you know, scan in. You know, I guess I'm kind of set back now to be like, yeah, like, let's just kind of see what the go is. Because at the moment, like, all the social media companies, like pretty much all the internet companies, were supposed to be like banning kids like 13 and under, right? Like 13, right. That was under the COPA, the Child Protection Act, like the US one, right? So this is really, at the moment, just taking that from 13 to 16, realistically, right? It sits with them, right? It's on the platforms themselves to, you know, not have them on there. Now, how that gets proved kind of remains to be seen.
But the $30 million fine that the government could levy against the social media then says, because that's what they're proposing, is $30 million bucks against the social media company that doesn't prevent children from accessing the platform. And I'm like, well, how are you going to police that? Like, my son's got an account that says he's 18 on Facebook because he wants to get access to Marketplace. And I'm like, fine, I understand that that's what you're doing, and I know the account, and I follow the account, and I can see what's happening on it. But it's only for Marketplace, and he literally just sends me stuff on Marketplace, and it's like, Dad, you need to buy this. I'm like, no.
But that's your decision as a parent, right? To allow him to do that, right? That's an individual decision made around, you know, what his abilities are and what he's, you know, that he's going to be fine with that, and you're monitoring that situation. So, yeah, it is an overstretch in that sense. And here's the thing, like, my daughter, she's 13 now, she'll be 14 in January. She's going to be affected by this, right? Because she's on some of these platforms. And if this comes in late 2025, right, she's on some of these platforms, and it is her conduit to her friends and her social sort of group. That's what they do at the moment. That's how they do it. And suddenly that's going to be taken away from her, right? No, it ain't going to happen, right? Like, come and find me, right? But, like, you know, she can deal with it. We can manage it. I've got ways of managing it here. You know, that's just suck it up, sunshine.
Yeah. Literally, if I need to, Matthew will get access to my Facebook account, my Instagram account and all the rest of them, because that's his way of connecting to his friends too. We live in a rural area. We live in an area where his nearest mate is about 10 kilometers away. And it's 10 kilometers on a very busy mountainous road. I'm not having him ride there.
Yeah, so he's not riding his bike there. No. So anyway, we'll see. As you said, Dave, we'll see how it fleshes out. But it's a mess. I think they've created a mess.
I think they have too. Really. And I hope that they rectify it.
Well, given that both the major parties were, you know, happy to stamp that one through in 3 hours, that ain't being rolled back.
That ain't being rolled back anytime soon. No, I think that's here to stay. All right, then, on that bombshell, let's get on with the community news. Ian, I think you threw both of these in.
Yeah,
what's going on?
So only a couple that I'm aware of for the next few weeks. Obviously, I've seen the rough agendas for next year for GDG events, as well as a whole heap of industry events, and it is absolutely jam-packed. So next year is going to be a big one. But on the Friday the 6th of December, so tomorrow as we're recording this, today as you're listening to it, GDG Swinburne Uni is running their Gen AI Study Jam workshop at Mantle Group's HQ at 6 p.m. They've got a LinkedIn link there that we'll throw in the show notes. And the Google developer community online on Discord is running their DevFest on Discord on the 13th of December. So jump into Discord and join up there.
All right, they sound like a couple of great events there. I will put links for those in the show notes. Okay, let's get on with the news items. First news item off the bat here is a quick financial item. An article came up on Seeking Alpha, which I think is a market stock sort of review place. Google Cloud is the only major hyperscaler gaining market share in 2024. The only one. I did highlight some things on here, but for some reason my highlights aren't showing anymore. But anyway, Google Cloud is running circles. The TLDR is Google Cloud is running circles around Microsoft Azure in terms of in-house chips and is still ahead of AWS on this front, which is cultivating into market share gains. And I think we've seen this with a few articles that have come out that constantly saying, you know, Google's moving ahead, the others are stagnating. Thanks to leadership in custom TPUs, and we've had a few articles about this recently as well, Google has been successfully accelerating revenue growth, due to the TPUs. There's been a 5% jump in Google Cloud's profit margin. Investors are liking that, and they're understanding Alphabet savvy AI strategies beneath the surface. So looks like, as we've seen, there's been good news for Google in 2024.
I think it was interesting seeing in this graph, there's like, they're all the providers are still growing, but you know, the other two majors, their growth has plateaued. So they're growing at, you know, so they're like 19% for AWS and Azure, about 33%.
That's right.
But Google's one jumped from 29 to 35%. Yeah. So their growth rate grew.
It's interesting to note too that when we talk, say, Google Cloud has jumped, that actually means Google Cloud Platform and Google Workspace. But the note I saw in this article was the CFO, Anat Ashkenazi. Sorry if I butchered that. I have definitely butchered that, and I do apologize. However, has said that GCP grew at a rate that was higher than cloud overall, which means that the cloud unit's growth rate was even higher than 35%. which is an encouraging number because Google's always been well behind Azure and AWS. AWS is obviously the incumbent, the big player, and Microsoft just throws stupendous discounts at businesses and tells them that they, if they move to any other cloud, then they're not licensed.
And their security is no good, But no, it certainly seems like a long, slow burn, doesn't it?
It does.
Slowly chipping away at it.
So we're seeing what Google now at about 13%, Azure at 20%, and AWS at 31% market share. So only 7% between Google and Azure. Like, that's not far off.
So, I mean, if this continues through 2025, it will be very interesting to see what position Google will be in at this time next year. All right. Well, let's move on then. Google, in a little bit of legal hot water, the Dodge is coming after them, and there's a lot to break down in this, but article here on TechCrunch, and I think this has been covered by a lot of places, saying that Google must sell Chrome to end the monopoly. Google saying it's a decision that could fundamentally change one of the world's largest business and alter the structure of the internet as we know it. Bit melodramatic, perhaps?
Yeah, look, maybe, but... look, I find this a bit of an interesting one. Google owns Chrome and they own search, and Chrome uses Google search by default, but then so does Safari on Apple devices, and Microsoft does exactly the same thing with Edge. So Bing is the default search provider on Edge, and if you've ever used Edge like me, the first thing that you do when you load Edge is go into the search provider's settings and change it to Google, because Bing sucks. The judge, Amit Mehta, has ruled in August that Google is an illegal monopoly for abusing its power over its search business. And the judge took issue with Google's control of various gateways to the internet and the company's payments to third parties in order to retain its default status. A search engine. Obviously, Google has come out and just gone, you know, this is crazy. Google's response is the Department of Justice not Dodge the car. Their wildly overbroad proposal goes miles beyond the court's decision. It would break a range of Google products, even beyond search, that people love and find helpful in everyday lives. And I sort of agree with them to an extent. As much as, you know, Chrome irritates the living daylights out of me sometimes with the amount of data that collects on you and all the rest, and it's sort of some of the weird things that it does. But every other browser out there isn't anywhere near as good.
No. And, you know, if you're using Google services like Maps, things like that, Chrome integrates much more tightly with them, right?
And even you can use other Chromium-based browsers, but I've found...
Absolutely.
So, and this is an interesting observation that I've had, and I've had this corroborated by a few other people too, is because I work in Google Cloud all day, every day. If I'm not using Chrome, I will have frequent page crashes in the console. Mm-hmm. Now, I use Firefox at work for my work platform, and I still see frequent crashes. So, and it's not the OS that I'm using. I'm using a RHEL operating system, so it should be about as stable as it ever gets. I don't see the same crashes in Chrome. So I'm not sure what's going on there. Bit of anecdotal evidence, perhaps, that Google optimizes for Chrome, and
wouldn't surprise me. A couple of things that come out of here. The filing noted that Google and other partners might be against the spin-off and suggested strict remedies, including not using Android to disadvantage its search competitors. So this reaches as far as Android as well. The Dodge hinted that if Google fails to put limitations on Android, it should be forced to sell it off. Interesting. Prosecutors also argued that the company should be prohibited from entering into exclusionary third-party contracts, such as we discussed with Apple. The Dodge also argued that Google should license its search data along with ad click data to rivals.
Mm.
Maybe another revenue stream, who knows? The Dodge also jotted out conditions prohibiting Google from entering the browser market again for 5 years after the company spins off Chrome.
Yeah, I think there's a big thing in here is just about the fact that Google owns so many of like the gateways to the internet. So, yeah. You know, you got an Android device, you got Chrome.
Well,
we've seen them over the years position
themselves like this, right? Yeah. Over the years, this has happened and that's happened,
And the same could be said for Microsoft for the desktop market. They own the desktop market, basically. Mm. Apple doesn't have a pinch on it. It's got, I can't remember the numbers of it now. Last time I saw it was like 3% or something. It was tiny. Yep.
Chromebooks aren't really there yet.
Android book soon. and so you've got Microsoft who basically dominate the desktop market, and they build Edge directly into Windows, and they set Bing as the default thing. Yep. So theoretically, they should be.
Yeah, but because we all remember when Microsoft got pinged for Internet Explorer, right? And so now Edge isn't as tightly integrated in, right? You do get a browser, but it's very easy to switch to another one. And, you know, whereas it used to be like Internet Explorer was always on your machine. Mm. You know, you just, even if you still had IE6 on there, you just couldn't get rid of it.
Well, your file browser basically Internet Explorer, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It does smack of a 90s lawsuit.
Of course, the Australian really government does. Jumped on, or the Australian, the ACCC, the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, jumped on board on this this nonsense, saying that Australia needs, Australian users need more internet choice. Australia's competition watchdog has said that there will be a need to revisit efforts to ensure greater choice for internet users, citing Google's dominant search engine market share and its competitors' failure to capitalize on the artificial intelligence boom. So basically, it's Google's fault that their competitors suck at their job.
Yeah, that seems a little bit of lazy writing there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know... We had an open internet. We had, cast your mind back, 92, 93, 94, right? And the internet was great. You could get on there, you could use whatever, you know, Netscape
Navigator 1.0, whatever you wanted,
right?
CompuServe.
I was on the Amiga then, and there was a browser, I forgot what the name of the browser is, but you know, Gopher.
Yep.
You know, CompuServe, all these things. It was great. Nothing was encrypted. It was completely open. But then governments decided that
it would be beneficial for them to control the internet because then they can control what people can and can't see.
Mm.
And that, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just been a slippery slope since then. And it's slowly becoming more and more restrictive. It's a sad state of affairs. But nevertheless, yeah, now they're arguing for greater internet choice. I don't get it.
Internet choice too.
Speaking of Australian internet, Aussie Broadband, they want to build their own cloud. This seems cool.
They can be a micro-scaler.
Very cool. Yeah, local darling. Local darling of internet Aussie Broadband, right? Like, I use Aussie Broadband.
Yep.
Been happy with them for Aussie Broadband.
Yeah. We all do. Yeah, it's the Australian way.
Because Aussie Broadband have grown so much and so quickly. Through both just normal growth of a business, plus they've acquired a few other businesses. So they've got a whole heap of different data centers around the place. And what they want to do here is consolidate onto one single platform. So they're building themselves their own cloud platform instead of using one cloud platform to rule them all. So their transformation and cloud platform general manager, Ben O'Shea, has basically described at a Cisco Live event in Melbourne what they're building. And what they're building essentially is infrastructure and container as a service capabilities initially, with the over time ability to do high level stuff such as DB as a service and API gateways, integration buses, and all that sort of stuff.
More platform stuff that devs want to just consume.
Containers.
Yeah.
So he gave a little bit of detail as to what they're using, and I know Dave, this sparked you and I to go on a search extravaganza to find out some.
Very cool what they're building out there. So, I mean, like for on the underlying level, like it's Cisco UCS infrastructure for all the compute. They're using NetApp all flash arrays for the storage. They're using Pure Storage for the Portworx, I guess for the fabric zoning.
Yeah, software defined storage software platform. That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
And Nexus Kit for their networking,
which. All the switching, yeah. So they can do their VXLANs all the way through. Very funky. I was actually surprised when I first read this, seeing both NetApp and Pure in there, because I've used like both deployments, and I particularly like. I was quite a big fan of the Pure storage arrays and the way they do like evergreen licensing, which is pretty cool. But this is interesting seeing it from like a zoning perspective.
But I think the thing that got us and thing that really intrigued us both. Was they've partnered with SUSE. So the Enterprise Linux company that builds OpenSUSE. So they're providing the cloud operating system software stack using Rancher RKE2 for containers and then Harvester for IaaS VMs and NeuVector for security and observability. Now, we had no idea what Harvester was. We had to go on a... Never heard of it.
Had never heard of Harvester.
And it is a super cool... infrastructure as a service platform and container as a service as well for Linux.
Yeah. So, you're still running basically KVM VMs under the hood, but they're treated as like a custom resource within Kubernetes. So it's still going to be Rancher running the Kubernetes environment, and there still are going to be pods that are related. The VMs themselves aren't inside pods, but some of the additional services like Qumu and stuff like that are required for the VMs, those are still pods that are all linked and they're all just managed.
And I think
still
the
cubes
one thing
under them.
That I really loved about this was the ability. So in Google's Kubernetes engine, and I'm assuming every other version of Kubernetes, you can have namespace. Separate all your workloads up into different namespaces, but that's only for the pod or the containers in that in Kubernetes. In Harvester, you can do that with VMs as well. So you can have a mixture of containers and VM in their own namespace.
Yeah, it's a really great way to be able to do microseg without having to do firewall rules and things like add all that additional complexity in there. I guess you'd also then be able to do service meshes for your VMs too.
Potential,
like that would be easy.
There.
Yeah, you can have your VM, you can throw a little Nginx pod next
to
it. And
so they're looking to retire their legacy corporate virtualization platform, which we can only assume is VMware. And the compute and storage hardware platforms that underpin it. And the existing Docker and Kubernetes platforms will be retired as well. And beyond replacing that, Ben O'Shea said they are also looking to host Aussie Broadband's ISP services as well. So DHCP, Radius, DNS, NetSIP, all that sort of stuff on this.
Yeah, I think their plan at the moment is to use this new environment to bring all like their corporate systems over, so all their internal stuff, and then over time, the additional services being layered on. But I mean, very, very cool. And, you know, they've got the chops to be able to run it. They're a good engineering org there as well. So, you know, some people who want to move back from the cloud to on-prem, you know, aren't going to have the wherewithal to actually maintain it. But, you know, I'd give Aussie Broadband definitely. A pretty good chance there.
I'd love to see what comes of it. I really would. It's it seems like a good endeavor.
Oh, I mean, I'm just excited about seeing more and more investment in more open virtualization platforms as well. You know, yes, we've got Proxmox, but we need to, you know, build up a few more layers on top of that. And, you know, having something that's a full open source like Cloud Stack, yeah, and even if you are going to get down to the point of doing like DBs as a service and, you know, like a Cloud Run equivalent and things like that, like,
yeah,
it's very cool.
Things like OpenStack.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. OpenStack was a good thing. And New Vector is another SUSE product. It's now called SUSE Security. So it's a full lifecycle container security platform. So and it has zero trust and all that sort of stuff built in. So really, really cool to see what they can do with this.
Real. The one thing that that stood out to me was because originally when I first looked into this, I'm like, okay, how are they doing VMs in pods? Like, you're not going to be able to do live migrations. Pods don't do that. They just, yeah, they're destroyed and you get new ones. But because they are still a KVM VM under the hood, you can live migrate between machines. So kubes will manage it. It creates like a migration object. or migration job, and, you know, handles all of that. So you still get a vMotion like experience for your VMs. They can move between nodes without being disrupted.
Right. So that's what libvirt does. And I notice they've got a library here called kubevirt. So I can imagine it's probably some sort of shim or something derived from that. From
so libvirt. Much stuff that we dove into that day that I posted that article in our chat.
Yeah, it was I stopped working. I was like, I'm going to go look at this for like the next 2 hours and then I start deploying it myself. Like,
this is so cool. I want to try it.
Nice. All right. Well, enough of the gushing for the moment. Let's move on. KPMG, they're going to throw some money at Google. $100 million, apparently. When my Chrome tab wakes up, here we go. KPMG said on Wednesday that it plans to make a new $100 million investment towards enhancing generative AI, data analytics, and cybersecurity services that it provides through an external partnership with Google Cloud. So they're throwing some money around. The $100 million investment will be made over the next 4 years. KPMG spokesperson said last year KPMG and in addition to that they also unveiled a plan to invest $2 billion into Microsoft's cloud and AI services. So hedging their bets there by the sound of it. This is all part of Accenture as well, while we're discussing that, also invested $3 billion in 3 years over data and AI practices to help its clients. So if you're an accounting consultant at the moment, it looks like throwing money at AI is the way to go. KPMG have gone on and said that its latest move will allow it to collaborate with Google Cloud on new solutions. Doesn't give us any details. They will help clients solve complex business challenges, focusing on data modernization and responsible AI adoption across industries. So I imagine this would be a situation where someone comes to KPMG and they're saying, you know, we've got this big mess. We don't know much about AI. Can you help us fix it and integrate with AI? And then KPMG might have some, you know, some turnkey solutions, some solution accelerators to help, you know, other businesses get on the AI bandwagon.
Yeah.
My read.
It seems like it might be a little bit of the Vertex AI agents integration with the business data so that they can start visualizing that.
And this article does finish off with an interesting note. It says, bookings for KPMG's Google Cloud practice have increased tenfold in the past 2 years.
Jeez.
So that aligns with what we were discussing earlier, where we're seeing a steady growth in Google Cloud consumption. Cool. All right. And one last article before we get on with the AI wars. Australia Connect Initiative delivers new digital pathways for the Indo-Pacific.
This one doesn't have just one, though. It has many.
Many. Yeah. What's this all about?
So there's a new Bosun subsea cable that is part of the Pacific Connect Initiative. It'll connect Darwin to Christmas Island, which is sort of northwest of Exmouth in WA, which also has onward connectivity to Singapore. Now, bosun, as some people might recognise, is the nautical term for a ship's leading deckhand.
The guy who hits you with the cat of nine tails if you're getting out of line, send you to the bosun?
Yeah, probably.
I thought that name was really cool because it's also the name of a bird on Christmas Island. How clever. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. It refers to the white-tailed tropic bird, the iconic bird of Christmas Island. But then additionally, there's a new interlink cable that will connect Melbourne, Perth and Christmas Island. And in Melbourne, the interlink cable will connect to the Hono Moana cable system, which stretches out to French Polynesia and then off to the US. And then the Bosun subsea cable system is working with partners like Vocus to deliver terrestrial fiber pairs that connect Darwin to the Sunshine Coast. So that will also connect Bosun to the Tabua subsea cable that connects to Fiji and then the US. So we're going to have a circle of cables. Right.
I'm saying that's really good redundancy there, yep. Right? It's a ring of reliability there. You can go around either way.
Yeah, so this is they don't give any stats as to how much bandwidth these cables are going to have or anything like that. It's just it's an announcement that, you know, it's going to happen at some point in the near future.
Yeah, really good and really important. I mean, we're seeing things like what happened, with this Chinese ship. We don't know exactly. Maybe it was accidentally dragging its anchor and disconnected two cables accidentally. The more cables we can have, the more redundancy we can build into the system because they're strategic targets now, right? These undersea cables that we were talking, earlier in the week about the number of cables that land at Bondi in Sydney. That's a real vulnerable spot. You drag an anchor across there or some sort of terrorist attack and take that out, and most of the country's offline.
Yeah, and I mean we've got a subsea cable landing in Maroochydore now up here on the sunny coast in Queensland. So yeah, they're definitely target.
Mm, mm, mm. And the more redundancy we have like this, going into different multiple CBDs, the better off we'll be.
Yep.
So I like it. I like it. All right, let's do it. Let's get on with the AI Wars.
AI Wars.
First article. It's a bit slow on the AI Wars this week, I thought, but...
all quiet on the AI front.
I know. Everyone's having a Christmas break, yeah.
First time AI has been quiet in his life.
I know. But I did find an article about the UK public sector and they're claiming, or Google is claiming, a Google report claims that if the UK public sector implements AI, they'll save themselves £38 billion. And that's not chump change. The report estimates that by 2030...
That's 15 billion Australia.
Yeah, yeah, the AI could save 38... This is by 2030 if they implement it. How could they do this? That's the first question I ask myself. How would they go about doing this? Well, examples include the potential to provide an additional 3.7 million GP appointments annually. Think about the efficiencies there you could make with the bookings and the schedulings and all that stuff, right? If that was all sort of handled more efficiently. Increase teacher to student ratios by 16%. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if the Gen AI thing can get their responses right, it absolutely could help teachers in the classroom so that you could have more students per teachers, right? If we're getting reliable answers and not what AI Overviews is currently giving us.
Yeah, exactly.
And free up the equivalent of 160,000 police officers for frontline duties. So if that's helping them on the desk, you know, generating their reports. But we
writing the, yeah.
But we don't want to go down the minority report path, right? That's let's keep away from that. No. But yeah, absolutely. If you could imagine, you could get all your case data, all the cold case data, put it in there, and then have AI, you know, start. You could do AI prompts and have AI formulate some conclusions on it all. That'd be great.
I see. So on the police front of things, I actually see the use case for AI as quite significant. If you can put all of your case data for all of your cold cases and all of your current cases into an AI and get it to sift through that and find links between them.
It's the links. That's exactly what I was about to say.
That's it. Because humans are good at identifying links, yeah. But AI is so much better.
Yeah. I love a good you know, murder mystery, true crime, late night, but watching a bit of late night true crime. And 9 times out of 10, if they can link 2 cold cases together, they'll solve both of them. That's a big part of it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I see that as a huge tool. Obviously the concern there becomes, how do you ensure that case data remains safe and confidential? Mm. Because, you know, there are people's lives at stake here. I think that's a massive use case for it, and that should be a use case around the world for it.
Yeah. But despite that, the adoption remains limited. Only 12% of public administration leaders reported significant use of AI tools, and this just comes down to understanding, right? With just 23% of public administration workers regularly using such technology. A majority of managers, 66%, believe AI will fundamentally change public sector operations. Through barriers such as regulatory concerns, outdated IT infrastructure, and a lack of digital skills persist. Yeah, that last sentence there just sounds like the public sector, right?
Yeah, that's right. That is right. Public sector, very slow to uptake anything.
Very, very slow. And it's such a shame because, we're talking about the UK here, but this could be any public sector in any modern country, Australia included. It's going to take a long time before this is, soaks into the public sector. Moving on then, and this is our last article. This is our last article for the year. And this is a cool new thing. Vertex AI grounding. More reliable models, fewer hallucinations.
Yeah, this one's an interesting one because, I mean, we've been talking all morning about how the new AI overview hallucinates and gives you the wrong information or gives you options for something that should be there but just completely isn't. And so Google has showcased their AI grounding. So large language models by default have a knowledge base that's, I suppose you could call it, frozen in time. It's a set of knowledge that doesn't change.
Not unless you miss Bell and Husk and you're hooking into X.
Well, that's what Google's doing though. See? So they don't get that latest data. Mm. And so Google's shown that to overcome this, you need to connect LLMs to a source of truth. So this is where the AI agents come into play. Because your Vertex AI agent can sort of go and index all your Confluence site or your Git repos or whatever it is that you've got to give you up-to-date information. And then and this is where concepts like grounding and retrieval augmented generation, so RAG and search, come into play. Now, retrieval augmented generation and search are sort of two of the same thing to a degree, because RAG doesn't exist without search. Search is the core platform that RAG is built on.
RAG's built on search, yeah.
That's right. And then grounding is obviously built on top of that to provide a grounded response and sort of influence the AI to pick certain paths in its in its generation.
Yeah, so you've got three components there. Grounding, which connects the LNM to real-world data. RAG, a specific technique for grounding that finds relevant information from knowledge base. And then search. Search is the core technology behind RAG, enabling to find the right information. Yep.
Yeah, so and that's essentially all this is the ability to give the LLM a specific context that gives it more ability to respond in a realistic manner as opposed to hallucinating and giving you, like, you might ask it for the power output of a Ford Everest and it gives you the power output of the American equivalent, which is entirely different.
Mm. Or the example that I gave, I can't remember if we went on air when I gave the example or not, of a piece of software and it was telling me to turn some option on and that option just didn't exist.
Yeah.
I think, without checking, that option was probably from an older version of the software, right?
Yeah, and that quite often happens too, because what Google's doing with this is implementing it and it's using things like Stack Overflow and all that to generate links and generate the response. And so quite often if you search for, like, how to do X on your piece of software, it's looking like it's finding an old version of it and it's giving you the response based on that old version, and that old version doesn't have, or it has a different option, or it doesn't have the option that you're looking for. Or
the one I had happen the other day was a classic. I was trying to do a gcloud command and I was trying to search for all the IP addresses in a particular, all the public IP addresses in an org. That's what I was trying to find. And I knew I probably would have to write a bash script to do it. But I thought, I wonder if gcloud, if there's an option for it. So I asked Gemini, I said, can I search for all, give it a prompt to do that. And it said, sure you can. You do gcloud dash dash blah 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 blah. I went, really? It doesn't look like a gcloud command, but it just seems pretty confident about it. So I went away and I tried this, and of course it failed, right? So then, continuing my search without the aid of Gemini, the first thing that came up was, just doing a normal Google search, was it a Reddit post, and the first original poster said, "Does gcloud have a command like gcloud dash blah 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 to search for all IP addresses?" And the exact thing that person had put in was exactly what Gemini told
me. So now, the pseudo command kind of.
Yeah, he was proposing, he was saying, this is what I'd like. Does it exist? Gemini had taken that as fact and presented it back to me as fact.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the hallucinations that Google's trying to stop here. Like,
yeah.
And with the search implementation, they've given an example here, which is all about, like, when and where Tay-Tay's next concert, and just using a general LLM, it can't tell you that because it doesn't have access to that data. It's frozen in time. Whereas if you plug LLM in with the Google search results, then it'll actually give you that. Now,
and I asked the question, why wasn't it like this all the time?
Well, because sometimes you can't do that. It's an evolution, and obviously there's guardrails around it that Google have got to maintain. But look, it's there, and yes, Google's AI overview at this point in time is fairly average, but I'm sure it will get better over time. I just don't want to use it until it does.
Yeah, okay. Well, hopefully it improves those AI overviews because they're a bit garbage at the moment. Well, look, guys, I think that's about it. That's about it for today, and that's about it for the year. We've been here for well over an hour and a half now. So
I'm measuring almost an hour and 50 on the recording.
Good edit. And I could tell Dave's itching to get back to his 3D printers, so we've got to let him go as well.
I got a busy day today.
Look, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music. Go to Apple Podcasts, write us a review to really help the show out. And while you're there, go to YouTube, start the discussion, and smash that like button You can contact the show, contact@gcpbytes.com.au. And you find us on the web, www.gcpbytes.com.au. And today's sponsors were Hive Tech Solutions and Mantle Group. Look, everyone have a good break and a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and all that jazz. I hope your families are all well and you have plenty to eat and drink over the break.
I know I certainly intend to.
Yep, you and me both, mate.
Awesome. All right, we'll catch you in the new year. Bye.
Bye.
Ho, ho, ho.
How you doing?
I am so far behind on this thing. I've just opened the articles now.
Yeah, cool. I opened them about an hour ago.
Okay, yeah, good. I've been up since 5, but it's just been, I've been doing everything else around the place. And
half past 3.
Yeah.
I woke up.
Yeah, I initially woke up at 4, like not of my own accord. I was like up and I'm like, oh, do I make a start? I'm like, nah, let's just see if I can try and get that extra hour back in. And then I was out.
Yep. No, I was up at half past 3 this morning and just could not get back to sleep for love nor money.
Ah, it's rough.
And I've got one hell of a day ahead of me today.